Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hi, Tasha. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I currently live in St. Paul, Minnesota, which is where I grew up. I just moved back here after spending 11 years in Alabama, where I got my MFA in creative writing. And I meant to only stay there while I was getting my MFA. And then I ended up meeting my husband there and getting a PhD also. Yeah. And so then I last year dragged to Minnesota with me.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what is your PhD? Like what was your thesis? What's your, the other written work that's published in
LA? Yeah. So my PhD is really different from my creative work. So my novel that's coming out, Love Letters to a Serial Killer, I was actually working on it while I was doing my PhD. So my PhD is in composition and rhetoric. And a lot of people aren't super familiar with that field, but how I describe it is it's like reading and writing outside of like books. So like anywhere that you see any sort of like text or even like speaking or images, that's sort of the stuff that we study in composition and rhetoric. So my dissertation was focused on the rhetoric of progressive women in Alabama. So I did a bunch of interviews with women there who were involved in politics and talked about different ways that they used rhetoric in a space where they aren't really seen or heard even within their own like political realm. So that's so different from my book. So I feel like I am a person, like I've been told before that in text, I can come off as like very serious and academic. And then like you meet me in person and I make lots of jokes and I like to wear a big bun in my hair and I like sparkly things.
Yeah. I love this. Honestly, I love the fact that you were writing this book while undergoing through a rigorous academic pursuit. And academic writing is very different from like writing fiction, especially like the fiction that you wrote. Like, it's just like, it's such a like a breath of fresh air. So I'm assuming that was a good escape to go to while actually, you know, writing like this other big book that it goes through rigorous, like, you know, review. And same boat, both go to rigorous review, but they're very different paths.
Yeah. And I think that academic writing really helped me appreciate creative writing. Like, I know a lot of writers who complain about having to write. And I think I used to do this when I was much younger. It's like, oh, it's time to write. Well, let me go wash the dishes or let me go do something else. Like, I don't want to write, even though it's supposedly the thing that I love to do and I want to do. And then when I started my PhD, and probably before then too, I was like, creative writing is like the most fun thing I could actually be doing. And it became something that I really actively wanted to do all the time, rather than something that I had to force myself to do because I was like getting a degree in it or whatever. So it's like eating candy instead of a meal. We were like, well, I just want to eat this candy all the time.
Yes. And I love the fact that your book, Love Letters to Serial Killer, marries the idea that we have the female fascination with true crime. Like, it's just everywhere. And like the fascination, like, it's just like it's part of a hobby. Like, I personally, sometimes I have PTSD. So I ever so often I can fall asleep to Dateline. But like that whole idea of like, you know, sometimes you just need a murder, like a whole like dig into the story and then get attached to it. So I want to know, like, what is your experience with true crime in your own life? Or like what led you to like fascinated to go down that rabbit hole as an escape?
Yeah. So I would not describe myself as a hardcore true crime person. Like I know that there are people who watch all the documentaries and listen to all the podcasts.
Yeah.
And that is not who I am. I sort of like the more old school stuff. So I really like, is it Anne Rule? Is that her name? She wrote like she worked with Ted Bundy in like the suicide call center. And so she wrote a bunch of true crime books. And I really like those sort of like original true crime texts where they're figuring out what true crime is. I also really liked Fatal Vision, which is a really popular true crime book that led to a bunch of other books that were sort of contesting the story that it told, because it like presented itself as like, this is a factual account. And then people were like, wait, like how factual can anything be? And then I like loved Helter Skelter. And I actually have a friend that I worked with who corresponded through letters with one of the Manson girls. And he was like, oh yeah, the whole premise about Helter Skelter is like totally fake. Like they didn't think there was going to be a race war. Like that was just to like get the attention off the other murders that they did, which I thought was so funny. So I read those texts, and part of the reason why I read them is because like in the book, like things are really difficult in my life and in the world. Like I was working full time, doing a PhD, dealing with infertility. There was a lot of stuff going on in the country or like the state that I lived in that was really stressful. And so it was like, okay, I just need to check out by reading these books about horrendous things that happened to other people. And I knew that that was sort of like maybe wrong or like not totally morally justified, but it was truly like a really relaxing thing. Like I had this image, I had a really nice porch in my house in Alabama, and I would like sit in the porch and like sweltering heat reading these true crime books.
I love this. Yeah, I don't worry. Like I think we all have like our own go-to escape. Like for me it was like spicy romances for a while, like, and now it's murder. Like it really comes down to like I went from like the husband, I can fall in love with the husband, or maybe the husband did it, you know, kind of deal. And so just because we're in the world right now, it's just, it's chaos, it's a mess, and it's just like I need something to escape from, and it's just, there's nothing to be guilty about, it's just this is what we need, you know. So all right, let's talk about love letters to a serial killer. What is the elevator pitch? What can readers expect from this book?
So I would think the elevator pitch is easily contained within the title. So it's about a woman who starts writing letters to a serial killer, and then she falls in love with him. But to add to that, I really think it's a like very millennial story. So the protagonist is in this job where she's underpaid and underappreciated, and she really wants to do good in the world, and all of those attempts sort of fail, and so, you know, she might as well just like fall in love with a serial killer.
I appreciate it. Like I was like, it's a very like I can identify for a long time as a temp, and like her story of a work situation was just like, yep, I can identify with that. Like, it's like trying to find your way in the world, but you're underpaid, you're overworked, and you're just, and at the same time, you're like, you find solace in communities, like rather communities and communities like rabbit holes and stuff. Like, I found solace in like my Bravo gossiping community. Like, it's just like talking about Bravo. It's like, it's a really great, like, great theme that brings it together. And I can identify with her life, and it'd be like, okay, well, you know, you might as well just send letters to a serial killer. He's cute. You might as well.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that her sort of work situation resonates. So she worked at a nonprofit, and I've actually never worked at a nonprofit, but I have had a lot of friends that have worked in nonprofits. And my husband actually got a job at a nonprofit after I already knew this book was going to be published. And I like apologized to his boss. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm not talking about you. And she was like, no, it's fine. I'd love to make fun of nonprofits. But I worked in academia for over a decade, and it was very similar. And that's what I think is interesting. It's like, it doesn't really matter the field that you're in. There's no field where people are immune to this. Like, I think, like, I graduated directly into the recession. And so, like, everyone I know really struggled to get their footing once they got jobs. Like, no one's being compensated appropriately. So we're sort of, like, missing out on these markers of adulthood. And so I think because we don't have these things, we take solace, like you said, in those communities. Like, I'm a big Twitter person, and Twitter is kind of falling apart right now, which is sad. But I found so much community in that space. Like, I found a really great writing community in that space. So I think that, like, online communities sort of serve to fill this void in our lives.
Yes. I just tell you, I have a group chat. I have lifelong now, like, standing appointments with friends on the internet. Like, and I live in Florida, and I have two Florida friends, so we meet every morning, and we find solace about, like, you know, the weight of Florida. You're probably familiar, just like Alabama was just a dumpster fire. Yeah. Similar ideas. And at the same time, we have solace, so, like, we have each other, and we have, like, we allow ourselves to pursue those creative pursuits at that moment, just to kind of, like, okay, we can be grounded in this space. But it's a lot of it, that millennial part of it, like, you know, we didn't have the what our parents told us we were supposed to have. We were told you were gonna have this perfect life, you know, we're able to buy a kid, like, buy a house, have a kid, like, get a dog, you know, even dogs are expensive. It's like,
I'm going to be real with you. The only way I got pregnant was through IVF. So I had to buy a kid. And the only way that I was able to have a dog and a kid was I used my, like, COVID stimulus fund. Like,
yes.
The first thing I did with my COVID stimulus money was get a dog. And then the next thing I did with my COVID stimulus money was get IVF. So, like, it was only through, like, getting that extra money that I could get the thing that I wanted so badly.
I feel like, you know, I was telling someone, I've been complaining about this to most of my friends. It was like 2024 and 2020 are very similar. They're very chaotic. The world is a shit and we're just starting to live it. And the only difference that I see is that we don't get government checks. I'm like, where is my government check? It's just for coexisting. Just existing.
I know.
I don't have money.
I know. I saw a tweet a while ago that was like, the stimulus checks in the spring made me, like, physically expect that that extra money was going to come to me every year. Yeah. So you, like, hit a certain time and you're like, oh, I just need, like, a little treat. Like, if only they could send me, like, that $1,000 for a little treat.
Yes. I don't know, but I love their fight. And so gotta pick out Love Letter Sister Killer, you know? I think it's a great book. And if you're following the Gypsy Rose debacle, her husband.
Oh my God.
This is a good companion.
I can't believe that she's no longer with her husband.
No.
Like,
oh no. Did you see? It's a food hoarding. It's like a whole, like, she found out that he's a food hoarder and it triggered her past childhood trauma. And she called him out there. She dropped, like, she cleaned up the kitchen or something. I don't know. It's fascinating. It's the whole story is just like, it's really
good. That was the story that I definitely got into. Like, I read about it when it, like, first happened, and then the TV show came out, and I watched a documentary about it too.
Yeah.
And people, all these people are like, well, why are you obsessed with Gypsy Rose? And I'm like, how could we not be obsessed with Gypsy Rose? Like, the story has everything.
It does. It has everything. And now it's a gift that keeps on giving. I'm glad that she's away from social media, but a girl is like, she's like all over the place. I think she's living her best life. Like, she was hidden. She was, like, in a prison for a long time. And now she's, like, rebelling. And she's like, fuck it. I'm going to do it all. And then it's like, you know, it's drama, drama, drama. You know, I wish her that she would have a quiet, like, peaceful life. I wish that she can just do that. But if she's just living her teenage dreams right now, going from ex-husband to ex-fiance, getting a nose job and getting tattoos and doing all the things, you do you.
Absolutely. And, like, I think that it sort of goes back to this idea of, like, likable and unlikable protagonist. Like, I think there are all these people who are like, oh, well, Gypsy Rhodes has this platform now, and so we expect her to be this perfect person. And like, how can she be a perfect person? Like, she grew up in an extremely abusive household. Like, why are we asking her to be like a role model all of a sudden, when she came from that environment and then went to prison? Like, I think the way that she's behaving is actually very relatable.
It is. It is. You know, we're rooting for you, just like Tyra was saying. We're rooting for you, but we're just going to let you, no judgment.
Yeah.
Do you. Just if you want to share it to the world, share it to the world. We're going to live with it. You know, we're going to enjoy it. Like, we're going to enjoy the ride. So, all right. So let's talk some book recommendations. What kind of books do you tend to read that could be like an escape from all the things? Because it's been a lot. So
how I got into writing thrillers is I was in an MFA program, and in MFA programs, you read a lot of literary fiction. And I love literary fiction, like, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it is really serious. And when I was, like, in my early 20s, just wanted to be, like, a really cool writer. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah, I love this experimental literary fiction about, like, women who are really sad. And then I had this moment. I remember it was when my husband and I first moved in together. And we combined all of our books, and almost all of our books were literary fiction. And I just wanted something to read before bed. Mm-hmm. And all I wanted was just like a mystery or a thriller. And I was like, why? We have like hundreds of books, but like they aren't what I want. And after that, I sort of like gave in more to my desires and to read like a lot of thrillers. I also read a lot of young adult literature, and I am a romanticy person, I will fully admit. So like everything I read is essentially like a different form of, and then I'm in a book club where once a month we read things that are sometimes more serious. So I do still try to get some literary fiction and like nonfiction, but for the most part, I read thrillers and romanticy, and to be real.
There's nothing wrong with that. Someone who reads romance and loves celebrity memoirs and loves, like, you know, the thrillers, the fast-paced thrillers, the popcorn thrillers, or just, like, keep me going. And I don't care about the plot holes. I'm like, just give me the ride. Let me just live my life. I see nothing wrong. Yes, there is a time for literary fiction. There's a time for issues, things. But, you know, my life is miserable, so I would like to have something fun to do with.
Yeah. And so, like, I also love books and, like, movies. So I, like, when I was younger, I sort of, I ironically loved the Twilight franchise.
Yeah.
And I, like, loved Edward, even though I knew that I shouldn't love Edward. So I sort of love, like, the, like, evil hottie. Which is like another place where I got the idea for this book, right? Because like we love fictional evil hotties, especially yes. if they're magic. And it's totally fine if they've like killed a bunch of people, if they're a vampire. And then as soon as you cross the line to like, oh, well, there's a human that's killed a bunch of people, they're like, oh, well, no, I can't do that. And so, but I think that's so funny. Like where we draw these lines of acceptable attraction.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the killer shadow daddy, oh, that's super hot. But then you have like a real life serial killer. And understandably, that should not be attractive. But you know what I mean? There's like sort of this like weird double standard that's.
There really is. Okay. We're meant to see. We got to talk about which ones are have been your go to that you're like, I'm loving right now. Are you young we're meant to see? Are you adult we're meant to see? Because there's like a.
I don't even know where the line is anymore. So I took a young adult literature class when I was in college. I wrote a paper comparing Twilight and Dracula. And one of the things she said is that young adult literature is read by teenagers and it's read by adults. And that's always stuck with me. And I think that a lot of people get really in a twist trying to figure out, well, like this is for adults or this is for teens. That I don't know that there's really a line. Like I sort of think that it's all the same thing. Like I saw someone like, get really upset because they were like, well, Fourth Wing isn't young adult. And it was like, it reads so young adult.
It reads like, young adult. It does.
Yeah. It's really I mean, it has a It has a young protagonist, like she's in school. I'm like, I don't know how much more
she's just like, and they age her up to college so she can have sex, really what it comes down to. But even that is still like, it's just, it's not, it's pretty young. Like it's a coming of age story. I think young adults tend to be coming of age, trying to figure out who you are in this world. And there's parental, and fourth wing, there's parental involvement. There's siblings. Like it's a very different than if you're like an adult where you're like, you know, parents are care, but they're not like the main driver of like decision making.
Yeah. So I would say, so I guess like I'm definitely a big Court of Thorns and Roses person. And then more young adult realm, I loved Holly Black's Book of the Air series.
Yep.
Like I think that does exactly, like I feel so silly even like saying fairies, but I think it does exactly what I want a book about fairies to do, where you have this like human who's so jealous of all the beautiful fairies around her. Because that's absolutely how I would feel if I were like the human surrounded by people who could do magic. I'd be like so salty that I couldn't do magic myself.
Yes.
But those are probably my two favorites, you know, big fairy person.
Yeah. Have you read Zodiac Academy?
No. Okay. I have not.
It's about fairy school. It's just addictive. Their books are long. It's like the series is ending this month. The books are long, but it's like it's set in this world, but at the same time it's magic and there's dragons, there's fairies, there's like,
who is the author? Movies.
Caroline Peckham is San Valenti, I think it is. It's on KU.
Okay.
The books are addictive. Like the first book is kind of like you're trying to get figure out the world, but then they just like progressively get more addictive to each other. You're like, I need to consume all these things. You know, so it's like a mishmash of everything together. And it's just.
And I'm always chasing that feeling of like, I just need a new series that I want to consume.
It is addictive. Like, I would say, like, if you don't like the first one, give it a second one a try. Like, they build it upon each other. You get the high. Like, they had a chokehold on me for while I was reading that. I was like, my friends were like, did you read something? I'm like, no, I'm reading Zodiac Academy. So, all right. So let's chat some book recommendations. Do you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up?
Yeah. So last week I went to the beach. I was visiting my in-laws. And so one of the things I like to do on vacation is I try to read like around a book a day. So I read Curtis Sittenfield's Romantic Comedy, which I thought was so good. And I think that it really like balanced the line between like being smart and funny and being like what I want from a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And I also read Naomi Alderman's The Future. So I'm obsessed with her book, The Power. Have you read that?
No. About where my list.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. So it's like women all of a sudden get the ability to shoot electricity through their fingertips. Like they just get so angry. And it totally changes the power structure of the world. Like sort of refuting this idea that there's like any sort of inherent essentialism within our current hierarchies. And so, you know, like women all of a sudden are in charge because they have this power to shoot electricity through their fingertips. So I'm obsessed with The Power. I think about it all the time. The Future is similar in that, but it is like, it has like elements of like science fiction, fantasy, but it's more like tech based. So it's like set in the world, but it's more like dystopian. I say dystopian, but it really is our world. But it's like these billionaires get this technology that tells them when the world is going to end and they should go to their bunkers. And then, of course, they get at the beginning of the book, they get a warning and they're like, OK, the world's about to end. Time to get on the plane to go to your bunker. And then things sort of unfold from there.
Oh, my God. That sounds good. That sounds like, you know, it's a little dystopian. But at the same time, like, it's a dystopian right now because.
Right. I mean, I think that I don't know that much about billionaires doomsday prepping, but my understanding is they are doing it.
Listen, yeah, they are. Yeah, oh my gosh. So Tasha, tell us where you can find you online.
I'm Vario Marine. So I'm on Twitter. It's at Tasha with seven A's at the end. Or you can just like search Tasha Coryell and find me there. On Instagram, I'm at Tasha Coryell. My website is TashaCoryell.com. I recently joined TikTok. I mostly make videos talking about writing, and those get very few views. Sometimes I'll post my dog or like what I made for dinner, and those get so many more views. Like it turns out that people just want to know what I'm eating or what my dog is doing. But that at Tasha Coryell Writer, I'm trying to figure out. So the more followers I get, the better, especially like writers or people who like books, because I'm trying to like let the algorithm know who I am. I'm like, just send me writers. And the algorithm's like, do you want this video about makeup? And I'm like, no, just give me writers.
Yes. We're gonna work your algorithm to start working for you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Tasha, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.